and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
CBS News Special Report. Israel and Hamas take a big step toward ending the war in Gaza, President Trump announcing that both sides have agreed to the first phase of his peace plan. CBS's Ed O'Keefe.
The president said he would travel to the Middle East this weekend, possibly Saturday, more likely Sunday, to meet with those as they sign off on a negotiation. What's unclear is whether hostages would be released before the president goes or once he's there.
Trump has just told Fox News.
The big thing is hostages are going to be released. It's probably our time would be probably Monday.
Mona Yacoubian with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It is an enormous breakthrough, and it is because of the work of negotiators, certainly the United States, Qatar, which has long played a negotiating, mediating role, Egypt, and now also the addition of Turkey.
Israel's prime minister says he'll convene his cabinet tomorrow to approve a plan for the release of hostages in Gaza. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
A bumpy road in Chicago. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball, game three of the NLDS. The Brewers losing tonight in Chicago, 4-3 to the Cubs. Starting pitcher Quinn Priester giving up three runs, including a home run to the Cubs' Michael Busch just in the first inning. Priester pulled after throwing 39 pitches, followed by Nick Mears with another 13, including a wild pitch. Jose Quintana later brought in his first appearance in a game since September 15th. So the Cubs stay alive. Game four tomorrow at Wrigley Field. Exact start time to be determined. NFL, the Packers practicing in pads in Green Bay today, getting ready to host the Bengals Sunday afternoon at 3:25. The Bengals trading for Joe Flacco from the Browns to take over in Cincinnati. Head coach Zach Taylor says he intends to start Flacco at quarterback. The Bengals trying to snap a three-game losing streak. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Yeah, Donald Trump's calling Democrats insurrectionists. And look, Trump calling Democrats insurrectionists is really a masterclass in playground psychology. The old, I know you are, but what am I move? Just not with a presidential branding. And after all, for a guy whose supporters quite literally stormed the Capitol chanting, "Stop the count!" Hearing him label Democrats as insurrectionists is the kind of reality inversion that only gets cooked up in the wild, weirdest world of MAGA Mad Libs. It's ridiculous. Also, you've got Trump accusing Democrats of kamikaze attacks on the United States as the government shutdown drags on. And again, you got to love the use of the word kamikaze. His metaphor, nice touch, as if siding with government shutdowns, deploying federal troops to blue cities and threatening, you know, Illinois with the National Guard is, hey, just another day. Just another day in patriot cosplay. Never mind that federal courts keep slamming the brakes on this stuff and governors across the spectrum are calling this a manufactured performance. I don't know. He's still in it. And now claims he's ready. Donald Trump, our executive, our unitary executive, our dear leader, he's ready to invoke the Insurrection Act. Yeah, yeah. A tool so rarely used. The last time it was brandished was was George H.W. Bush, only after mayors actually asked for the help. But, you know, if the president gets to decide who counts as an insurrectionist, well, then apparently attempting to pass budgets, keep national parks open, or just, you know, expressing concern for humanity, this is now treasonous behavior worthy of military intervention. Way to go. Why debate policy when you can just call the other person, you know, kamikaze or enemy of the people? And then your folks can, you know, go after them. Then you could call in the cavalry, so to speak. If this is the new insurrection, let's just hope that he doesn't start handing out medals for good behavior at the next shutdown. Because at this point, the only person starting anything remotely resembling an insurrection is probably the one auditioning for the role every time he unveils a fresh package of warlike rhetoric from the Oval Office, which is what we got from Trump. Are we surprised? No, not at all. Are we surprised that Republicans are full of it? No, not at all. In fact, on Monday, you had House Speaker Mike Johnson had this wonderful, and I got to tell you, I love when Johnson speaks because it's so full of it. But here's Mike Johnson talking about healthcare, and I couldn't help but think George H.W. Bush.
So they created a red herring. A red herring is a distraction. They decided that they would pick a fight on healthcare. Well, let me look right into the camera and tell you very clearly. Republicans are the ones concerned about healthcare. Republicans are the party working around the clock every day to fix healthcare. We're not, this is not talking points for us. We've done it.
We've done it. Read my lips. I care about healthcare. And look, this latest declaration, let me look right in the camera, is basically the read my lips moment. It really is. Because fixing healthcare in their world means, well, what, nearly 100 Republican votes to repeal the ACA, pulling coverage from millions of people, gutting almost $1 trillion from Medicaid, you know, a program that Republicans opposed as far back as 1965 when it was introduced, and have never missed a moment, an opportunity to assault and attack it. And oh, let's talk about Medicare for a moment. Remember Republicans calling it socialized medicine and said it would doom America and have tried to kill it repeatedly? The ACA, legislated, upheld, and saved by a few maverick votes, if you will. Republicans voted over and over and over and over and over and over again to repeal it without any replacement. They talked about repeal and replace, but there's no replacement. I'm sure that Donald Trump has a plan. It's called pay or die. And this idea that they're working around the clock, really? What it means is they're working night shifts to slash protections for people with pre-existing conditions. What it means is they're getting up early, trying to make sure grandma gets to go back to the good old days before prescription drug coverage. So when Johnson and his friends claim that they're not spouting talking points, kind of hard to believe. From the party whose working class tax cut act managed to cut, what, you know, 10 to 15 million Americans from Medicaid coverage, while oddly spinning it as some kind of heroic reform. If that's fixing healthcare, I'll pass. I'll pass. As we are going to watch healthcare premiums soar and coverage being eroded for countless people, this is their crusade? This is the legislative equivalency of, you know, sorry, Rick, we're going to have to kill you if we're going to be able to save you. You'll be dead, but it'll be okay. And if history is any guide, the Republicans' version of healthcare reform is less about fixing what's broken and more about breaking what works. And this idea that they're thinking about it, they're thinking about ways of taking it away, of making it, well, more affordable for those who can afford it and non-existent for those who are desperately in need of it. Be very careful in this moment, because these people have shown us who they are. His rhetoric, let me look right into the camera. Let me look right back at you. Do you remember that whole bear false witness thing? I know you want the Ten Commandments everywhere, but there's one of those rules. It says you probably shouldn't lie. Because this is a lie. It's, well, I can't say what I really think. It's BS. Let's go with it's BS. And they know it's BS. And you know it's BS. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell me what you think. Do Republicans have a plan? Is there a master plan? And do they care about you? No, they don't. rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, it almost defies reason, logic. But on Monday, there was a press conference which Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was talking about the furloughed workers, talking about the shutdown, and came out with something that I thought was kind of interesting, but not surprising. Here's Mike Johnson.
Whether the furloughed civilian employees of the federal government will receive back pay, it is true that in previous shutdowns, many or most of them have been paid for the time that they were furloughed. But there is new legal analysis. I don't know the details. I just saw a headline this morning. I'm not read in on it, and I haven't spoken to the White House about it. But there are some legal analysts who are saying that that may not be appropriate or necessary in terms of the law requiring that back pay be provided. So I'm sure that'll be there will be a lot of discussion about that. But there are legal analysts who think that that is not.
Yeah, they're legal analysts. They're legal analysts. And do you know where this new legal analysis comes from? They just reached behind them and popped out a new theory, because that's what this is. They're just making stuff. They're just making stuff up. And the thing that gets me is, he's not alone in this. Because then on Tuesday, you had the Office of Management and Budget, who stripped from its shutdown guidance any reference to the law that was passed back in 2019, guaranteeing that federal workers who are furloughed get paid back pay. And then our unitary executive / CEO / president, he suggested that, he gets to pick and choose which loyal furloughed federal workers might receive back pay. Kind of makes you wonder. And here to share some thoughts on, all of this insanity, and are we surprised by it? I've asked my good friend David Borer to come share some thoughts. David is a labor attorney with Gilbert Employment Law. You can check out their website, gelawyer.com. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So you saw Mike Johnson. You heard the words come out of his mouth. There's a new legal analysis, David. There's a new theory. This is new, David. It's new.
Yeah, it's new, all right. You know, I don't know what kind of anti-worker crack they're smoking over there, but this is what happens when you do that. The law is clear. The Government Employee Fair Treatment Act says these workers shall be paid. It doesn't say might be paid. It doesn't say they'll be paid if the president has a good day and feels like paying them. It says they shall be paid. And that's the bottom line here.
Does it? Are you sure it's, it doesn't? There's not like a signing statement that went along only if dear leader says so, or if you've signed the proper loyalty oath, or you have your favorite executive order. Are you sure there isn't something in the like a signing statement or something?
No, nothing like that, Rick. Look, this goes back in history. You know, we're the only country in the world that does this nonsense with letting the budget expire and then running around in circles while the government has to shut down. In a previous life, when I worked for the biggest federal sector union, I argued that, all right, if you're going to shut it down, you have to shut it all down. You can't, like, pick and choose. Shut down the prisons, you know, shut down the hospitals, shut down everything. And knowing that, obviously, they would either never shut it down or every shutdown would be over in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, because it defies logic. Look, David, it defies logic that I got to go to work and I don't know when I'm going to get paid. I mean, this just seems very simple, even to the dim and the dull and those of us who aren't attorneys. It seems pretty simple.
Yeah, it does. Well, and that's the other thing. It's we argued too that it was a violation of the 13th Amendment that you know, slaves had jobs, they just didn't get paid, right? And this kind of falls into that category. You got hundreds of thousands. Picture this: hundreds of thousands of federal workers going to work, working just as hard as they do or harder on any given day of the year, and they're not getting paid. And how, you know, where, who, how can that be possible, right? And imagine, you know, in a different context, let's say you worked at a factory or a grocery store or some other facility, and the owner announces, well, I didn't get the budget done, so y'all are going to have to work for nothing for the next few weeks while we figure this out. Well, guess what? You'd march down to the wage and hour office and file a claim, and suddenly you'd be getting triple damages because they didn't pay you on time, right? But no, the federal government doesn't subject itself to that sort of thing.
Now,
the historical thing is important. After many shutdowns over the years, it always came down at the end, are the federal workers going to get paid? And, you know, they had to fight and claw to get paid what they were owed. And so in 2019, after the world's worst government shutdown in the 2018-2019, they passed a new law, the Government Employee Fairness Act and Fair Treatment Act. And that law says shall be paid when it's over. So here we are.
Yeah. Now, on Tuesday, you had the Office of Management and Budget who pulled this little stunt by just, you know, quietly, like maybe nobody might notice that you were just changing your shutdown guidance by pulling this out that, hey, you know, maybe down the road we could argue this in court that it wasn't there, so we could screw people out of their wages. Surprised it was, you know, within, you know, not too long before people figured it out. And then I got to tell you, I looked at this and I'm going, well, this is what conservatives do really well. They've got an infrastructure where they've war gamed this out. They've thought this out. This wasn't, in my view, and you can help me if I'm wrong, just some inadvertent omission. This, in my view, very planned out.
Oh, absolutely. They may not have planned it before Monday, but, you know, if you looked on the website on Monday, it was in there. And on Monday, some of the departments issued memos saying, you know, we're going to get you this pay as quickly as possible when it's over. And then even today, I think some of the websites still have it on there. So they're obviously playing a game here. And look, you know, the legislation says what it says. I think Senator Van Hollen said, the law is the law. It says shall be paid. So, you know, if some 20-year-old Doge, you know, reject is sitting over there looking at this with like one eye and kind of, you know, holding it up the light and saying, oh, I bet if we, you know, think about this just right, we could imagine some other way to screw federal workers. Well, you know, that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, but
it doesn't say what they say it says.
But we heard Mike Johnson. There's people out there. There are pundits out there. There's new analysis, David. This is new.
Yeah, it's new. You know, Mike Johnson isn't going to win the Oscar for sincerity. You know, he gets up there and says this stuff all the time. It's whatever way the wind from 1600 Pennsylvania is blowing, Mike's out there, you know, with his finger in the air. I'm sorry, it isn't. You know, Trump signed the law, for God's sake. It was adopted in 2019 when he was president. Nobody had that interpretation.
Again, I go back to, are you sure there was no signing statement? Because, you know, they sneak things in. Because I do think they think further down the road, because look, they pay a lot of really smart people a lot of money to dream up bad ideas and more ways to attack workers. But during that same presser on Monday, since you brought up Mike Johnson and his sincerity and all that, he said, let me look right into the camera and tell you very clearly, Republicans are concerned about health care. Evidently, according to him, the Republican Party, his words, Republican Party, working round the clock to fix health care. This is not just talking points for us, he said. We've done it. And I looked at this, I was just, this is kind of his, you know, read my lips. Yeah. And read my lips, Republicans, you know, don't give a squat about your health or your health care.
No, that made me feel so good. You know, I got this warm feeling, and oh my God, this is great. Mike Johnson is going to, you know, save millions of people from either dying because they can't afford medical care or from going bankrupt because they can't afford it. Gee, what a great guy. And we all know it's a hoax. They aren't in favor of that. There's a handful of Republicans who were in favor of it before the shutdown, but they're, you know, they're all toeing the line now, and everybody who's out there depending on those subsidies is going to get screwed. If this isn't in place by November 1st, we got a problem, you know.
And that's where we come to this head, because, you know, you've got Trump running around in the Republicans saying this is the Democrats' fault. They shut this down. This is the new line that I'm getting. We want good health care. We want to negotiate. But the problem is they weren't there. And, you know, the other day I had a nice conversation with Brent Booker, the president of LIUNA, who I loved his frame of, this is a lockout. This isn't the Democrats didn't really have a choice. When nobody shows up to negotiate, how do you have a negotiation?
Well, and look around. If the other, you can't negotiate somebody who's not trustworthy and honest with you, right? I mean, I've spent my whole career negotiating contracts, and I'll take a smart, you know, wired up, you know, hard hitting lawyer on the other side of the table every day of the week and Sunday. But don't bring in an idiot that is just out to screw people and is going to lie and cheat and steal to get there. That's a whole different ballgame. You can't trust these people. So that they want to say, oh, well, just agree to this and then we'll come back later and take care of your problem. Yeah. I mean, we weren't born, you know, the old saying, I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night.
Or I wish I had the George Bush clip. Fool me once, can't get fooled again. No, but that's the reality in this. And I've been asking, yeah, you know, which is more worthless, Trump's word or his signature? Because again, as you pointed out, he signed in the law.
He signed the bill.
That we're going to pay you.
Yeah. No, they're just making this up. Look, Rick, they're making it up. They're trying, you know, it's a deadlock and they're trying to break the deadlock in their favor. And they want to ratchet up pressure on the Democrats. So what do? They stir up trouble with millions of workers, hoping that will create more pressure on the Democrats to cave on this important issue.
Yeah.
So it's pretty transparent what the hell they're doing.
But shouldn't this be the moment that, that organized labor goes, hey, you know, look, this is, I look at this as kind of a gift. The fact that this is one of the clubs that they're pulling out of the bag. The first thing they did is going after construction projects in blue states. Now they're talking about not paying the federal workers as the law says they have to. It yeah. seems like everything is pointed at how do we screw over the working people?
Well, and you know, yeah, that's absolutely right, Rick. And you know, they're dropping federal agents into apartment buildings in Chicago on a rope out of a helicopter and setting off flashbangs in apartment buildings. I mean, come on. Every working person, every working class person, every person with any kind of conscience. I don't know if you saw the picture of the 2-year-old in zip ties, any kind of conscience at all, people would be in the streets. And, you know, the next opportunity for that is on October 18th. There's a big, you know, nationwide protest planned, and people need to get out there.
Oh, yeah. This is what I've been calling for. You know, people need to find the streets again and in the process find what solidarity means. As I say, every generation has to figure this out. Now, it looks like some Republicans are walking back from this threat. Do you see this as a possibility that they're going to maybe not pay some of the furloughed workers? Or was this like a trial balloon to just try and see where it got? I'm curious strategically the point in this. Or do you think like I do, they were really trying to slip this under the radar?
Yeah, you know, it's not like they issued a news release. They went in the dark of night and changed the website and didn't tell anybody. I mean, yeah, they were trying to slip it in. And, you know, even if it's a trial balloon, you can't trust these guys not to go forward with it. And so, you know, it's going to be a race to the courthouse. Law firms like mine and unions all over the country running into court to, you know, beat this back when they stiff these employees for their money, if they do.
Yeah. And here's the sad reality in this, you know. The Trump administration and Trump himself have gone after the unions that would be the ones going and fighting for these workers and trying to steal collective bargaining rights, going after dues dollars and ensuring that those don't get into the union's coffers, because they knew unions are the last line of defense for working people in this country.
They absolutely are. The federal sector unions are leading the fight against all this stuff. And in Chicago now, I saw today or yesterday, the teachers union has stepped up in the fight against the ICE invasion. Stacey Davis Gates out there made a terrific statement. And of course, the mayor is a former CTU leader. You know, unions are on the front line of this, as they should be, but we've got to, you know, build a coalition of people. Look at the farmers. You know, a lot of farmers voted for Trump, but all of a sudden, the $200 billion worth of foreign markets dried up for our soybeans, and every farmer that's hoping to make money on soybeans is just SOL now. We've got a great opportunity, I think, to broaden our coalition, bring in the farmers, sort of like the old days of in Minnesota, the Democrat Farm Labor Party. And, you know, we got more in common than anything that divides us. And together we can all, you know, line up and beat this.
Yeah. So last question I've got for you. Is that the message? Is this what Democrats should be hammering home? Because I got to tell you, I'm not seeing a unified message yet. Maybe you've got a different thought. I see them trying to walk away from it, trying to take credit for it. Me, if you're going through this, you got to go into it. You can't run halfway away and maybe step into it. You got to go through, I think. So I'm curious your thought. Critique?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the way you described it is right. You know, you can't, it's hard to get the car going in second gear, right? You've got to really hit the gas and run with this thing. They, you know, there should be coordinated nationwide protests between, you know, labor and community groups and Democratic groups and farmers and everybody else. You know, a strongly worded letter yet again from Chuck Schumer isn't enough to, you know, bring Trump to his knees. It's going to take millions of people, and we should be in the streets.
I'm right there with you, and you don't run from it. You go, damn right I did this, and I did it for this reason. Healthcare is an important reason, making sure workers get paid for the work that they do, incredibly important reason. I say you go right head first. But, David, I appreciate your thoughts, your expertise. Love having you on. Hope to talk to you again real soon.
Great, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. Our good friend David Bohrer, labor attorney at Gilbert Employment Law. You can check out their site at gelawyer.com. Want to hear your thoughts. Do you see this as the opportunity that I do? Do you think Democrats need to maybe steal the spine a little bit? Take responsibility, own up. And, you know, with that come potentially the rewards when you're on the right side. Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Right back.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to 540 WAUK.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, lows in the mid-40s. We'll look for sunshine for tomorrow, nice day with highs in the low 60s. A slight shower chance for Friday with a mix of sun and clouds, highs into the upper 60s. More 60s this weekend, currently 49 degrees.
Hey, it's Dan Haney. Join me weekday mornings between 6 and 9 as 540 WAUK presents All News All Morning. We start the day with everything you need to feel informed. Stuart J. Waddles has Milwaukee and local news three times an hour, followed by Leslie Lotto from the Civic Media State News Desk, CBS News, Mike Clemens in sports, traffic and weather, money and market updates. Start your morning drive with All News All Morning on 540 WAUK on 100.3 FM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, you know, talking about, they just decided, hey, you know, we've reinterpreted the law. There's new legal analysis. And again, as I said before, the new legal analysis is we just reached around to the dark side of the moon and popped out a new theory. We just made this you-know-what up. But in making this up, they now are going to claim they get to decide who gets paid and who doesn't. That's why I've asked my next guest to come share some thoughts on this whole government shutdown, what it's going to mean. And, you know, what it's like to show up every day, go to work, punch the clock, work your behind off, and know that there's no paycheck waiting for you at the end of the week. So I've asked Johnny Jones to come talk with us. He's the president of AFGE Local 1040. He's also secretary treasurer of AFGE's TSA Council 100, as well as a working TSO based in Dallas, Texas. Johnny, thanks for taking time for us.
All right, thank you very much, Rick. We appreciate it.
So walk me through this, because you know, I'm sure you've seen the new analysis. You've seen the new, we're just making stuff up. Evidently, dear leader, our unitary executive, I guess, claims can maybe decide who gets paid, who doesn't. You know, it's undecided law, Johnny.
I can tell you one thing it's going to do is create chaos in the workforce. It's bad enough to know that you may not get paid. Now they're saying, hey, if you take your leave or you're on a furlough, well, you may or may not be paid. It's going to be, I hate to say it, what is it, your pecking order, or maybe they're going to look at your how you voted last time, for all I know. This is a pretty wild situation and a new development, which is unfortunate because it does create an additional level of uncertainty for the workforce as you're going to work and be like, well, how much longer is it going to take to get paid? Are they going to be like, hey, this person does, this person doesn't? Normally, it's just a real quick system. The funding gets restored. They go through, they fix your payroll, and that's that. But if this is the way it's going to be, I can not even imagine how it's going to play out.
No, but this is another sign of look, you know, Trump talks about being pro-worker. The Republicans are making overtures to trying to say, hey, we're the party of the working class. And the first thing they do, first club out of the bag, is sticking at the workers.
Yes, we are the frontline working class. We're U.S. citizens. We swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States, which we do every single day. We protect the flying public every day, including all the congressmen and senators who fly in commercial airliners, the other ones that maybe they don't have access to private jets or something of their own. But for the most part, we do engage with the representatives of the House and the Senate on a regular basis as they travel through the TSA airports and to screening locations. They know we are working people. We are blue-collar, sweaty people who work all day in the summer, in the hot tub. You know, when it's the flight delays, we stay late. When they need us to come in early, we come in early. So whatever it is that they need, we're here for them.
You being in Texas, I'm sure you've come across Ted Cruz and his sombrero pictures that he's because evidently, you know, they've got nothing else to do. So people like Cruz can send social media posts with Democratic senators wearing sombreros and weird, funny looking mustaches, kind of mocking his heritage, which is kind of weird, it seems.
And most definitely is a strange place we live in these days. One of the things that came to my mind, it was very recently, is like we have a bunch of politicians on either party, doesn't matter, that are not legislating for the people. And it's about time that we have normal people in these positions in Congress and in the Senate. We're sick and tired of people being bought up by big money politics. And let's just start putting regular people in places that can actually do the job and are dedicated to that. It's kind of funny when people go to Congress, they're either poor to become rich or they're rich and they're trying to take over and control what the poor are doing. So there is a definite problem with our political system here. And it's probably part of the reason why we're having problems here in this government shutdown.
Yeah, no, the reality is these are people who don't know what it's like to need a paycheck. Because I've had a number of people go, well, we should stop Congress from getting paid. And I'm going, they're going to get paid by somebody. If not the taxpayers, somebody's footing the bill. And you're right. I want people who are closer to needing that paycheck than to not.
One of the things that you got to look at, the people that legislate, they write the laws for the land. So when it comes to like when they're collecting campaign contributions, I'm sure the laws allow them to get a hotel room alone and say, hey, I'm at all of a sudden a political event when I'm not going to pay. I don't know exactly how that works, but I'm sure it's not written friendly for the for them. It's written friendly for them, not for the American people. So I'm not really too concerned about the congressional leadership that makes you $200,000 a year plus whatever else they receive. We're talking about TSOs on the front line to make $50,000 a year that live paycheck to paycheck. They're worried about child care. They're worried about gas. They're worried about food. They're worried about paying their house payment or their rent. And some of these guys actually have had to move back in with their parents because the rents are so high already. And so there's always the finger pointing, but now we also have other inflation costs that are coming in. There's a multitude of pressures on the working class, not just the government shutdown, but this is just one of the focal points that we're dealing with.
Let's talk about your members. Let's talk about the people that you work with, because you guys are showing up right now. No paycheck at the end of the week. There are all of those concerns, all of those worries. Every quarter, you got to squeeze till the eagle screams. What's going on? How are you doing, and how are your members doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, we're a two-income household. You know, my wife has a different job. It's not affiliated with the federal government. I do have some reserves that I'll have to probably prepare to execute and use. You know, maybe selling some stocks here and there. During the previous government shutdown, we had to prepare to sell a vehicle because I don't want to get a loan. I'm sick and tired of paying interest on the behalf of somebody that just won't pay people on time. During the last shutdown, the members remember having to take loans from banks or from some of them offered 0% loans. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're borrowing money. You have to pay it back. So it starts this domino effect in the workforce and they fall back further behind. If they were already behind, they're a little bit further behind. And then they're not getting like some big giant paycheck. Then they're going to get taxed for all the money they earned all at once. It just doesn't work out well for the frontline bargaining employee in these scenarios. And the members, like today, for the first time, they haven't received their pay yet. So they went out and paid all their bills. And they're like, oops, I don't have enough money to get the gas. So they actually are asking for gas cards now because they knew how long this went last time. They're like, okay, let me make this payment. They, you know, unable to manage their finances.
What's the sense of how long this could last? Because we don't know. I mean, I liken it to back when I went on strike in 94, you know, having to worry about, are we going to be keep a roof over our head, food on the table, that kind of stuff. But I can't imagine that this is something anyone's happy about, especially the people who have been furloughed. Because when we coming back, can I go get another job? Can I do something else? Any word on those folks?
Okay, so the folks that are furloughed are in a furlough status. They're not required to come to work, but they're in the situation where they may or may not be paid based on whatever the congressional law is written at that particular moment in time. The good news is the rhetoric from one political part of the government, I mean, one part of the government, the executive branch is different from the legislative branch. Nowhere in the legislative branch have I heard, hey, this is what's going to happen. They're not going to pay people. But the executive branch is saying, hey, we may not have to pay people. So it gets a little confusing. But the good news for us is that we haven't heard that become like the prominent discord communication coming out from the House and the Senate members. However, you never know what's going to happen. So you have to watch these bills as they come around. Watching the news has been a very bad time for the employees because it seems as if the parties are very far apart. And they're both dug in, and they're not willing to negotiate. And this could go on way longer than we want it to go on.
Yeah. No, I mean, but look, you know, I didn't want the shutdown. I didn't think it was a great move. But I do believe Democrats were pushed into this. They didn't really have a choice. In my view, we can differ on this. I view this more as my friend Brent Booker pointed out the other day, as a lockout. Because Republicans didn't want to negotiate. They weren't at the table. So for me as a union guy, I kind of agree that, you know, what choice do you have but to shock the system and get people awakened, you know, folks like your members calling their representatives, you know, raising a little cane to get this system moving in the right direction. I am curious your thoughts on that, though.
Sure. My thoughts on it are like this. They have about 90 days before one of the big issues is the health credit, affordable health care credits expire. There has been no prior olive branch to negotiate this problem. And so for their perspective, there's millions and millions of people that could be impacted way more than the federal workforce. And they have to look at it from the aspect of like, hey, we can either upset the smaller basket or we're going to have the whole field of people that are going to be hurting. And sometimes you have to pick one of the two battles. Now, it's unfortunate. I don't agree with the government shutdown because of that. I think they still have a little more time to negotiate. However, I do see the fact that there has not been like, hey, we're willing to negotiate. We just do this 7-week CR. We'll negotiate. We promise to do this in good faith. That hasn't happened either. So I don't really know what other choice you would have if you're not receiving those olive branches.
No, and look, you guys are living through part of this massive war on workers as they stole your collective bargaining rights away. I mean, it's just been one bad thing after another. And there are those who are saying, you know, maybe this is what we needed to kind of, again, shock the system, shock working people awake. Because if they're doing this to you, if they're doing this to federal employees, how long before everyone else?
Well, your collective bargaining rights are definitely under attack. If you're a federal employee, you are definitely under the watch of removing of your rights, the collectively bargained contracts. They did terminate ours on March the 7th of 2025. We had to file a lawsuit and we in the 12th District Court, and we were able to get the temporary injunction against the agency. So they had to reinstate our contract, and we're in the pre-litigation phase of discovery and stuff of that nature. Because we signed a 7-year contract, it lasted for a year before it was terminated by the Department of Homeland Security, which we are the frontline workers of the Homeland Security. I don't understand why you would want to take away the rights of people that protect people every single day. All we're trying to have is this fair rights here. I don't quite understand the need to terminate unions or go after unions, because even the Republicans say, oh, we need the union workers. We want to help out the workers. Well, it's time for them to step up and say, hey, stop the attacks on labor. If you truly believe in that, and a lot of people do vote, I don't care how they vote one way or the other, but if you are a supporter of labor, it's time for you to say, we are supporting labor, and that includes both sides of the aisle.
No, but I look at this, and this is one of those moments where, you know, got to be honest, all during the campaign, I was saying this stuff's coming. The attacks on workers are coming. We saw the first club out of the bag was going after construction workers by shutting down a bunch of projects in blue states across the country. Now coming out with, hey, we might not have to pay, even though the law seems, as someone who's not a lawyer, who's an outside observer, seems fairly clear that this is what we did back in 2019 to ensure that you guys aren't used as pawns in their political chess match. But here we are again. We've got our dear leader running government like a business, like a CEO deciding, well, maybe we're not going to honor our word. And for me, that's bigger. Those are bigger concerns than what we're going through in this very moment.
Well, look, when you have somebody who's willing to flip a switch and force you to litigate everything, which he believes they'll win in the courts, that is legislating from the judicial branch. When you have the executive branch and the legislative branch is already approved and signed off on the bills, and all of a sudden the executive branch says, "Oh, we're not going to do it like that. We're going to change the rule," and then you have to go through the courts. First of all, it's very expensive. Very expensive. It's not a cheap thing to do, to go through federal court system. A hope that nobody has to do what we've had to do is not cheap. It's not like going down to your local courthouse, okay? That's the first thing. Secondly, it doesn't cost the government anything because they have all these attorneys on staff, but we have to pay for all the attorneys. We have to pay for all those things. Yeah. And people don't understand, you fighting the federal government, they have an unlimited purse. And if they don't win or they have to pay, guess who pays it? The American taxpayer. It is not just it is an unbelievable thing. So they say that people waste money in government. I hate to say it. There's a lot of money being wasted right now.
No, absolutely. The people who are talking about government efficiency seem to be the most inefficient and spendthrift of our lifetime. And the sad reality is, I believe what you guys are going through, clearly by design, was part of Project 2025, part of what we knew was coming. But it's about you spinning your resources and defending yourself instead of organizing and fighting for better wages, hours, conditions for all workers. It's about just defending what little piece we organized labor still has. So on their side, this is a massive mission accomplished. So I guess last line of questioning I've got, because out of all of this, there's got to be an organizing opportunity in this as working people have to wake up to the reality that they are under assault. And that they are the target in most of this stuff. Do you see it as maybe an opportunity when you're talking to your members, to people who may not be members? Are you seeing the opportunities that are coming from this?
People are scared. Yes, there's a lot of opportunities. Okay, people are scared. They don't know what's going to happen. So when you're a federal employee, your health care is governed by the Federal Employee Health Benefit Plan. We are about to start seeing some of the biggest increases ever in federal employee health insurance. So, and I'm going to say, why is it happening? Let's just look to the big, beautiful bill. Let's look to the subsidies the amount of government's going to be paying for your health insurance. Look at the ability to have a different way of paying for your health insurance. We are going to be rallying around the fact that your biggest thing that comes out of your paycheck is your health insurance. And it's about to be a much larger component, much larger than that 1% cost of living adjustment that the president signed. When everybody else in the federal government's getting 3.8, but the federal employees are getting 1%. So there should be better pay increases coming from federal employees. We have a lot of rallying around that. The federal employees typically get the short end of the stick for the billionaires and tax cuts for other folks. When it's time for people to step up and take care of the blue collar workers, including those at the federal government level, because once they are able to start revamping our stuff and tearing our stuff up, we are the gold standard. Everybody else follows the government contracts as the gold standard. When they're able to get rid of the gold standard, you're going to move to the silver standard or bronze standard or basically no standard at all. And that's a dangerous thing. We haven't had that since the late 1800s. And that's the reason why unions formed and became so powerful in the first place. We are going to have that moment and it's on the way. It's just going to take that watershed moment. We don't know exactly when it is, but people are going to come out with their pitchforks and they're going to be very upset about what's happening.
Final word. What do we need to do?
Well, what we need to do is put the right people in the right places. That includes your legislators. We need to make sure that we have qualified, good candidates for the office of the other offices that are elected, not just the White House, but your civic leaders, your local leaders, your mayors, your state and house members. Gerrymandering is going on in Texas to try to change your congressional districts to hold on to the power of the House of Representatives. Some of the craziest stuff that's going on. We need to legislate fairly for the people, not for the people that make all the money and pass it on. Look, after World War II, the top tax rate in America was nearly 90%, and it was like that until the 70s, and our country experienced a golden age. And so people always say, well, you got to lower taxes, otherwise it's going to hurt people. That was not true. If that was the case, how come we had the the biggest, largest, longest period of the golden era of America. And that's the foundations of MAGA. It's like, well, they need to remember how that was built. And you know what it was built on? The back of labor movement. We had 40% of Americans were in labor unions in 1950. And today we're sitting at 9%. So you want to bring back the golden age of America, you're going to need to bring back labor unions in full strength to fight for the American people, to fight for better pay, to fight for pensions, to fight for better health care. And you know what? Maybe one day we'll be actually be like, we can have a single earner in a household again. Now everybody has to work two jobs. Some people have to work two jobs and you're married and you got two people working two jobs. This is not the America dream that we want.
There you go.
And we need to go back and remember my grandparents. I don't ever remember either one of my grandparents having both of them working at the same time. My grandfather was retired Air Force in 1970. My grandmother never worked, okay, other than when she was making airplanes in World War II. My other grandparents only worked part-time at Famous Bar, okay? My grandfather worked for Anheuser-Busch for 37 and a quarter years, okay? My family is pro-labor, pro-union. We know what it can do for America. We need to get back to doing that.
Amen. Johnny Jones, appreciate the time. Keep up the fight. I wish you the best. Hope you'll come back and talk to us when this is all over.
All right. Thank you very much for having me, Rick.
Thanks so much. Johnny Jones, president of AFGE Local 1040. He's also the secretary treasurer of TSA Council 100. I want to hear your thoughts. Are you a federal government worker? Are you one of the folks furloughed? One of the people showing up without a paycheck? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1871. That was the day that the Great Chicago Fire began. The fire started in a barn on the property of Patrick and Catherine O'Leary. Legend pins the blame for starting the fire on a cow. Whatever the cause, the fire spread quickly throughout the city's wooden houses. For 2 days, the uncontrollable fire raged, destroying everything in its path. In the wake of its devastation, nearly 300 people died, and 100,000 families had their homes destroyed. One person who lost her business in the fire was renowned labor leader Mother Jones. In her autobiography, she wrote about the fire destroying her dress shop, saying, quote, "The Great Chicago Fire burned up our establishment and everything that we had. The fire made thousands homeless. We stayed all night and the next day without food on the lakefront, often going into the lake to keep cool." Millions of dollars were raised by the Chicago Relief and Aid Society to help those who needed help to rebuild. While the society did provide significant aid, treatment varied along class lines. To get assistance, the working class had to prove themselves worthy with personal references. Middle-class applicants for aid were more likely to be quickly approved to get money to rebuild. Working-class people had to wade through long approval processes. Some never received that approval. The experience galvanized some members of the working class to organize for change. One of them was Mother Jones. She wrote, "From the time of the Chicago fire, I became more and more engrossed in the labor struggle, and I decided to take an active part in the efforts of working people to better the conditions under which they worked and lived."
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Look, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but the reality is it's time for Democrats to stop with the nervous statements and the self-congratulatory pats on the back and all that stuff, and to really get out there and take on this administration. And I know I'm going to get a lot of angry emails. No, Rick, they're out there doing that. No. You've got to, what I'm saying is they've got to take responsibility. They got to step up in this moment. Because the Trump administration's out there lighting matches, burning down decades of progress for working families. And there are those who still think that, we can negotiate. Still think that the American dream is something you can gently negotiate out of committee. It's time to really step this up. Show a little fire in the bellies, if you will. No nicely worded statement is going to help. because working people are out there getting their lives ripped apart. Trump just yanked $32 billion worth of infrastructure projects from hard hat workers across this country and the reverberation effect in every part of that economy. He's basically shut the door on green jobs and treating federal employees like they're pawns in some kind of, well, ridiculous MAGA game. And that he thinks he can fire at will, threatening to make their financial suffering permanent just to win another bout in some endless culture war that they're fighting. At least slam your fists on the table a couple of times. Because the reality is you're soon going to start seeing federal workers lining up at food pantries because the paychecks that they're missing are going to start adding up. And they're going to wonder if, you know, hey, look, I've spent years trying to do this job. My career is spent serving the public. And is this going to be the end of it? We're watching Trump and his cronies rebrand the assault on labor as some kind of weird MAGA patriotism. And the sad reality is too many union workers are getting screwed over in this. So no more press releases, no more sound bites. Get out in the streets. And look, on October the 18th, the No Kings rally that's going on across this country, and especially in Washington, D.C. and in other major cities, get out, get to them. Because look, if Democrats don't raise, you know what? Who will? Seriously, who will? And how many times do we have to watch as this administration does what they're doing? How many times do we have to go? Yeah, we're going to lose good jobs. We're going to let workers be used as pawns, leaving families out to dry before we admit that fighting for bipartisan solutions is just waving the white flag. It's time to go right into the storm. Look, Trump didn't invent using working people as leverage. He's perfecting it. Like the Pinkerton thugs at Homestead or the Southern Mill bosses that broke large strikes, some of the largest strikes in American history, he'll break bones and pride in all of that if it means he gets to win the headlines. So Democrats, do something. Storm into the damn fire. Seize the moment. Call out injustice. Flip tables if you have to. Remind the American working class that you're fighting for them and what fighting looks like. Call the sabotage out for what it is. The public isn't fooled. Look, poll after poll shows people are blaming Trump and the Republicans for this chaos. You can't hide behind technocratic talking points or some kind of process. Time to get out there and ball up the dukes. Into the fire. And I know people are going to go, but Rick, you know, we need to negotiate. No, you've tried. You've been watching Democrats try, because one of the main frames that I keep seeing is, how is this going to end? The first rule on everyone's how this ends is Democrats caving. Because, well, the thought is it's what they do. And I'm hoping in this moment, because of how badly Trump has backed them into a corner. Because understand, Democrats are in a corner. They could go, screw 10 million people, 15 million people, take their health care away. You know, gut the ACA, gut the subsidies, make health care completely unaffordable for a large number of people in this country. Even people who currently today have health insurance. But they've taken a stand and they're fighting. And you got to give them a little bit of credit. I don't know if it's enough. I'd like to see them out there a little more vocal, a little more aggressive. But at least trying. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Is it going to be enough? Do you think there's a shot to save health care in this country, or do you buy Mike Johnson? You know, read his lips. They're thinking about you every day. They care. Anyone buying it? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, download the podcast, or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump says Israel and Hamas have reached a deal to release all hostages and partially withdraw Israeli troops. It's part one of his Gaza ceasefire plan, and he says he will be involved in keeping Gaza peaceful. The president tells Fox News he thinks Gaza hostages will be coming back Monday.
They're deep. They're deep in the earth, and they're being gotten, and a lot of things are happening right now. As we speak, so much is happening to get the hostages freed.
BBC Chief International Correspondent Lise Doucette reports.
Here in Tel Aviv in Hostages Square, the square is already starting to fill with people, family members of the hostages, Israelis who've been demanding an end to this punishing war for all of the hostages to come home. And the scenes that we're seeing in the images being sent from Gaza, in a place which lies in utter ruin where nothing works anymore, that a